got my bags packed and on a roll. I'm heading out there and I'm ready to go. Looking real good in my passport photo.
Amateur Traveler, episode 403. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about beaches, a volcano or two, and a lake of tar as we go to the Windward Islands of the Lesser Antilles in the Caribbean. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Before we get into this week's interview, I do have three news stories for you. Say what you like about tourism being down to the U.S., or at least not up as much as in other countries, but a woman just got caught trying to sneak into the U.S. in a suitcase. Now, she was in a car. This wasn't carry-on luggage. Meanwhile, an interesting story out of Kuwait. Iraqi passengers attacked a Turkish cabin crew after an emergency landing in Kuwait. No, this isn't a terrorist attack. This is grumpy tourists. The pilot told passengers he had to fly back to Istanbul because of worsening weather in Iraq, triggering protests by 15 Iraqi passengers. He radioed the airport security staff, who boarded the plane and calmed the Iraqis down. After the security staff left the aircraft, the Iraqis started to protest again and attacked the cabin crew, prompting the captain to phone security again. They were later removed and taken to the airport to wait for another flight. And the most amazing part of that story to me is, if this happened in the U.S., you would not be waiting for another flight. Or at least, you'd be waiting a very, very long time. And speaking of things being different in the Middle East, sometimes they're not. The most popular food style in Iran right now is American-style burger joints. According to an article, greasy burger joints have been part of Tehran's fast food landscape for decades, even in the years just after the 1979 Islamic Revolution, when any symbol of the U.S. culture was denounced as an example of West toxification. Those eateries were most in downtown working-class neighborhoods, serving laborers. Now, though, high-end burger restaurants are suddenly popping up across the city, making the gut-busting American institution the latest trend in Tehran dining. Maybe we're not so different, after all. For links to all three of those stories, check out the show notes at amateurtraveler.com. I'd like to welcome back to the show Gary Arndt from everything-everywhere.com, who's come to finish up that show we started last year on the islands in the Caribbean. Gary, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me for the sixth time, is it?
Sixth or seventh time, yes, and I don't know, actually. I know that you can tell because Gary has his own tag on the Amateur Traveler. All his shows are tagged, so if you like this show, you can go to the website and find the other ones that he has been on.
I believe this puts me in the lead.
It either does or it ties you for the lead. Not that we're competitive by any means. Last time Gary was on, we talked about the Leeward Islands of the Lesser Antilles, and I believe this time we're going to talk about the Windward Islands.
Yes. The Lesser Antilles is roughly divided into two different groups of islands. And the French island of Guadeloupe is sort of considered to be either the last of the Leeward Islands or the first of the Windward Islands. And so for the purposes of this discussion, we had it as the last of the Leeward Islands. And so the Windward Islands will include the islands of Dominica, Martinique, St. Lucia, Barbados, St. Vincent and the Grenadines, Grenada, and Trinidad and Tobago, and then oftentimes the ABC islands of Aruba, Bonaire, and Curacao are also added to that list. But I think for the purposes of the show, we'll leave the ABC islands separate.
And last time we talked a little bit about that you did these actually all as part of one trip, both the Leeward Islands and the Windward Islands. And we're going to repeat ourselves a little bit, I'm afraid, here, but you talked about some of the difficulties of traveling island to island. There's some groups that are meant to travel to together, and there are other groups that are more difficult to get back and forth. Did you run into as much of that in the Windward Islands as you did in the Leeward Islands?
The first group of the Leeward Islands are actually quite easy, and that would be Guadeloupe, Dominica, Martinique, and St. Lucia, because they're all connected by ferry. And so it makes it very easy to get between those islands, and three of those four being the Windward Islands. And there's a French ferry service. Basically, it's designed to get to Guadeloupe and Martinique, but then they also go to St. Lucia several times a week. Guadeloupe and Martinique, we'll deal with them together because they're both the two major French territories in the region are quite large. They are by far the largest islands in terms of both landmass and population in the Lesser Antilles. I should say with the exception of Trinidad, which is kind of its own thing, and we'll talk about that later. The combined population of both islands, I think, is close to 1 million people, approximately 500,000 on each one. They are culturally very distinct from the rest of the islands. They are very French, as if you've ever been to any French territories, it is a part of France in the same way in which Hawaii is a part of the United States. And so the French culture has taken over more so than, say, a British culture has in some of the other islands that were former British colonies. Even though there's still a great British influence in terms of cricket and food and things like that, the French islands are still very much French and have a much larger French population, as in migrated from France, than the other islands may have a European population. And they're also the most expensive because they use the euro, and almost everything has to be shipped in from France, even though something cheaper may be available in the United States or Mexico. And that causes prices on the island to be quite high, and was with a major complaint I heard from a lot of the residents on the island.
When you say has to be shipped in from France, clearly that's more political reasons than market
reasons. Right.
It's
not a logistical reason. It has something to do with the French laws and bringing things from France, or having a preference for French goods or something. But yeah, it does make it. And I should also note the flip side to the higher cost is that the standard of living on those islands is also probably higher than in the rest of the Lesser Antilles.
And what is for a tourist or a traveler to do in those islands? What would you recommend?
Same thing in almost every place. Very nice beaches. Because the islands are larger, you will see more in terms of rainforests and forests on the interior of the island, things to do there. You have zip lining, hiking. It's on the other islands, but not quite as extensive. And they're rather large islands, so it could take the better part of a day to actually even drive around one of them, especially Guadeloupe, given its odd butterfly shape.
And you mentioned the French culture. Last time when we were talking about the Lesser Antilles, you also mentioned a couple islands that are also French territories or French dominion. I'm not sure quite the right term there. Are they very similar, or are these yet again different from each other?
The other one I mentioned was St. Bart's, and St. Bart's is very different. It's much smaller, and it has a greater influence. It's closer to St. Martin. St. Bart's was probably the least French territory I've ever visited. And I've been to New Caledonia and French Polynesia in the past, in addition to Martinique and Guadeloupe. And I think that just has to do with who visits and its proximity to the other islands. Whereas both Guadeloupe and Martinique are very large and are relatively more self-sustaining or self-sufficient than some of the smaller islands like St. Bart's, which is actually quite small.
How long did you spend on the two islands that we're talking about so far?
Not a lot. I'd spent most of my time on the other islands, and they're both big enough that I would have no problem returning to them and having a completely different schedule. I should also note, I'm always looking for affordable places to stay. And in the Lesser Antilles in general, the options aren't very good. But the only actual youth hostels that I found were on Guadeloupe.
Interesting.
And I actually stayed there. So those options are available, and you do see more Europeans that visit because there are direct flights from France. And they're almost big enough where at some point in the future, you might even want to do a dedicated show on those two islands.
Okay. Excellent. Should we move on then to where? To Dominica?
Yeah. Dominica.
Dominica.
It's the accent on the other
Sorry.
Syllable.
I knew I was going to say that one wrong.
Well, it's a confusing thing because when you say that, people assume often that you're talking about the Dominican Republic.
Right.
They're spelled the same. It's simply where you put the emphasis on the syllable in Dominica. Dominica was probably my favorite island in the Lesser Antilles. It is the least visited country in the Western Hemisphere. A very small country. I believe the population is around 80,000 people, but it has a lot to offer. It is a very rugged island, meaning that it's very mountainous, and it still has a lot of active volcanism. So the world's largest boiling lake is located on Dominica. And by boiling, I do not mean a hot spring. I mean, if you put your feet into it, you will have to go to the hospital because it will scald your skin that hot. And when I was there, I had several people that would tell me stories of tourists that come in and they're like, oh, I'm going to put my feet in it. And then it's a 3-hour hike to get to the boiling lake, to give you an idea. And
doing that on the way back with boiled feet is not a good idea.
Yeah, so they would have to either carry you out or bring in a helicopter or something, and all the options are not good. But that being said, there are some wonderful hot springs. There's a place I visited called Screws, and that sounds like some sort of adult resort, but actually it's named after the guy who owned it, whose nickname was Screw, because everyone said he had a couple screws loose, hence the name. But it was actually a very nice place, and it's this series of cascading pools. And he did some work to build it up with some cement and some rocks. But other than that, it's all natural and piping in some water. And you kind of go from one pool to the next, and it starts out very hot, and then it kind of works its way down to cooler pools. Very neat and very affordable. And it was a place where I met a lot of locals that were there as well. So it isn't necessarily just a place for tourists.
So something like Pamukkale in Turkey, or I want to say the seven sacred pools, the so-called seven sacred pools in Maui, except with hot water.
I know the one you're referring to in Maui, maybe not quite as big. And I have no idea what you're talking about in Turkey, but sure.
Okay. Well, you've got to get there.
Yeah.
It's very unusual. Just for those of you who haven't heard Gary before, it's very unusual if I have ever been to any place Gary has not been to, because I think I've been to 28 to 30 countries, somewhere in that range. And I know you're over 100 by now.
I went to 44 in 2013.
So everything-everywhere is becoming more and more the accurate name for the blog.
Actually, I was thinking of putting the limit sign in front of everything everywhere, just to make it mathematically accurate.
There we go.
One of the other things I liked about Dominica was the place I stayed at was a hotel called Rosalie Bay Resort. Mm-hmm. And it's on the windward side of the island. Now, most hotels in the Caribbean will be on the leeward side because you don't get as much wind. Mm-hmm. But this was on the windward side, and I actually really liked it. And in fact, if you remember, I did an episode of This Week in Travel while I was in Dominica, and I remember taking my laptop outside and showing people. Very eco-friendly resort, their own windmill. They have a turtle rescue program where they're helping green turtles, leatherback turtles, hawksbill turtles. We did a hike where I got to take some great photos. All in all, I just really think Dominica was a wonderful place. And it's one of the easiest places if you want to get a second citizenship. I think you can buy it for like $100,000 or something.
Yeah, if I had $100,000 lying around, that might not be my first choice. But now, we had done another show actually on Dominica, although I suspect we pronounced it wrong throughout the entire show. But one of the reasons our guest had gone to Dominica was he had read a review of the scuba diving in Dominica as one of the best spots in the world. And I know that you were a diver as well. Did you get a chance to scuba dive in Dominica, first of all?
I did not.
You did not.
But I can easily see why that might be the case, because you have the active volcanism, which may make for some very interesting features underwater, plus the coral growth and the other wildlife you'd see.
Okay. And I was going to say this for later, but did you get a chance to do scuba diving in any of the islands, and did you have a favorite spot for diving from this trip?
I did a dive on the island of Saba. Mm-hmm. And, where else did I go?
Well, and leaving off the ABCs, which also have a very good reputation, because we're going to talk about that some of the time.
Yeah, I did diving in both Aruba and Curacao, but oddly enough, not Bonaire, which is best known for diving.
Right.
I think I just did one dive, now that I think about it.
Okay.
Yeah, I actually got to stick my arms in some hot sand and stuff, which is kind of neat, which was geothermally heated.
So a hot sand beach?
No, not a beach. It was like 10 meters underwater.
Oh, while you were diving. Oh, okay. Yeah. Got it. Got it. I was not associating that with my question. Excellent. What else would you recommend in Dominica?
Explore the island.
Any particular hike or particular trail or particular activity you would recommend in exploring the island? We talked about it being mountainous.
Yes, I would. One of the things, as your listeners may know, is I go to UNESCO World Heritage Sites. Mm-hmm. And Montois-Pitons National Park in Dominica is a World Heritage Site. And this includes basically the interior of the island. It's a rather large park and thermal features such as the lake. So definitely visit the national park if you have the chance and basically just drive around the island. It's not a very big island. It's mountainous. So it may take you a while to get from A to B. Oh, and the other thing I should mention is Trafalgar Falls. One of my favorite photos that I took in 2013 was at Trafalgar Falls. It's this double waterfall, which when you look at it, it almost looks as if it's a river splitting into two waterfalls. It's actually two completely different rivers that just so happen to meet in a very close spot next to each other, so you can see both waterfalls. You can actually hike up to the base of the waterfall. And one of my favorite pictures of this year was actually, I was about 100 meters away from the waterfall, and this woman who was standing at the waterfall gets up, puts her arms out with my back towards me, and like poses as if she's going to dive or something in front of this massive waterfall. And just one of my favorite shots. And it's a very interesting place to visit.
And you said this is a UNESCO World Heritage Site. Many of the UNESCO World Heritage Sites are designated that way because of the history, but others because of the ecology. I assume this is the latter.
Correct. Okay. In fact, there's only, well, no, there are two UNESCO sites in the Lesser Antilles that are cultural. Mm-hmm. And that would be the Brimstone Fortress on the island of St. Kitts, and then the historic downtown area in Georgetown, Barbados, or Bridgetown, Barbados.
Okay. Interesting. Where to from here?
We kind of lumped Martinique and Guadeloupe together, so the next would probably be St. Lucia. And St. Lucia has a very different feel from Dominica. And the primary reason that Dominica gets so few tourists is that there's nowhere to put a large runway in the island. Hmm. It's so mountainous that you can only land a plane on a very short runway, so you have to fly somewhere and then fly to Dominica on a puddle jumper or take a ferry. St. Lucia, however, is a bit more flat, and as a result, it can take large jumbo jets, so it gets much more tourism, and it's also a much larger island. I believe the population of St. Lucia is over 200,000 people, whereas Dominica was high 70s, low 80,000 or something like that.
Interesting. Okay.
And I actually ended up spending a fair amount of time in St. Lucia simply because I had won a travel photography contest the year before, and one of the prizes was a week stay at a resort in St. Lucia. So that's what I did. It was one of those all-expenses-paid places, which I almost never visit. But before that, I also stayed in another resort. The highlight of the island by far is an area known as the Pitons, which is in the southern part of the island near the city of Souffre. And it's basically two mountain peaks, and it's sort of the symbol of the island. If you look at a flag of St. Lucia, that is one of the coolest flags, I think, of any country in the world, because it kind of looks like the Star Trek logo. The kind of delta or pyramid in the middle represents the Pitons. And almost any photo you see of St. Lucia that shows some iconic image is going to show the Pitons, and that's also a UNESCO World Heritage Site.
And it is a UNESCO World Heritage Site because of...
It's a natural site, yeah, not a cultural site.
Well, sure, right. We mentioned that there were only the three cultural sites. But because of the plant life there, the flora, the fauna, the views. I mean, you mentioned the volcanism on Dominica.
I'd have to check the real reason why it was done. I think it's basically just because of the land formation.
Okay.
But the other thing about Dominica is it had a former French history, which is found in the names of some of the cities. And you'll still see some French spoken patois in some of the local dialect. But for the most part, former British colony before achieved independence, they play cricket. And also, the Travel and Leisure magazine came out with their 50 best hotels in the world, mm-hmm. I believe a few days before I arrived in St. Lucia. And I think three of them were on the island.
Oh, interesting.
So for a very small island, it has a lot of relatively nice hotels.
Relatively nice as in one of the more expensive places to stay?
Yes.
Okay.
Going into the assumption that you get what you pay for.
Yeah, well, I would assume so. The Travel and Leisure is not a budget travel magazine.
Right.
A little aside here, you mentioned that you very seldom stay at an all-inclusive resort and had one this stay. And the main reason for you for that decision is what? I know why I don't, but I'm curious.
You never leave the property. Okay. When I was there, I never left. You're basically in a gated community. Everything is kind of there. And quite frankly, I was there to work. But I prefer to stay at a smaller hotel that's more attached to the community around it, where you go to restaurants or things like that. And most of the people you see at an all-inclusive resort, they're basically just there to get drunk and eat and sit on the beach. And that's not my idea of traveling.
Okay. I have similar reasons, but I just wanted to hear yours because we don't usually talk about it. And one of the reasons we don't normally talk about it on the show is it's not that appealing to me. So, excellent. Anything else we should talk about with St. Lucia?
Oh, I should add that there are two airports in St. Lucia, the main international airport you'll be flying in on if you come in from, say, the United States or Europe or something like that, is quite a distance away from the capital. So it's like a two-hour drive. Whereas if you come in on a puddle jumper, you actually pretty much fly in right into the capital. And it's right on a beach, and it's in an excellent location. So if you do go to St. Lucia, be prepared for arranging some transportation or check with your hotel or find out beforehand, because otherwise it may be a very long and costly taxi ride.
Got it. Okay. Where to next?
From there, I went to Barbados. And what I have to say about Barbados is going to be a little bit limited, because I was only there a day, and I was also detained by the government for 3 hours while I was there.
And I remember this story, but tell us what happened there.
Well, in most countries for that matter, but island countries in particular, have a rule on the books saying you have to show proof of onward travel before you arrive at a destination, mm-hmm. which simply means you need your ticket out. And if they ask to see it, you have to show them. And that's what the rule is in most places, proof of onward journey. Mm-hmm. And so when I arrived in Barbados, I had already booked my ticket to the island of St. Vincent. So I get at the immigration. She says, when's your ticket? I say, yeah, I have a ticket to St. Vincent. She goes, after that? I said, well, I'm going to Grenada. She goes, after that? Well, I'm going to Trinidad. And I was like, well, why do you care where I'm going after I'm out of your country? She goes, do you have a ticket to the United States? And I said, no, not yet. She says, well, you have to have a ticket to the United States. Evidently, the law in Barbados is you must have proof of travel to your home country, which I find a bizarre rule, why they would care what you do once you leave their country. But also, it pretty much means if you're on an around-the-world trip or you're just island hopping, it legally makes it very difficult to visit Barbados. So, yeah, they detained me for 3 hours trying to resolve this, and eventually they had a representative from the airline, Liat, who I normally complain about because they're one of the worst airlines I've ever flown, but they stepped in and took charge of me or vouched for me or whatever, just in case I got arrested during my period on the island. So they eventually let me go to my hotel, and I did.
We have, by the way, another episode on Barbados for a little bit of a longer stay and without the getting hung up in customs on the way in. But
I should add that the one day I happened to be there, ironically enough, was the day of the country's biggest celebration, which was the Crop Over Festival, which is basically the Barbados version of Carnival. So it's a big festivity you have in the capital, and I actually got to participate in some of that because I had a late flight out.
No, you say version of Carnival. I'm thinking you weren't there in spring.
Correct. It was the, first of all, not all of the Caribbean nations celebrate Carnival
at Mardi Gras.
Ash Wednesday or Lent.
Okay.
Correct. So Antigua, I know, does it in August. And I think the big celebration in the Caribbean is Emancipation Day, which I believe is August 4th.
Okay. And would that be true for mostly the places that used to be British? Sovereign? Okay.
Yeah. Because that was the day the British Empire ended slavery.
Okay.
And in Barbados, crop over is a little bit a few days after that, but also a celebration of, I think, the bringing in of the sugarcane crop, which was traditionally the largest crop in Barbados. And so people dress up, you get carnival outfits. The singer Rihanna is from Barbados. And I know she was there, and they always had what costume she had on in the newspapers. I saw that the next day. They have Mount Gay Rum, which is one of the biggest rum brands I saw while I was in the Pacific, is in right in the middle of Bridgetown, and the big crop over parade goes right down the middle of it, and it's just basically a big festival and lots of rum and beer being sold and consumed on the parade route.
Interesting. And the one thing we should say, too, you mentioned sugarcane. My understanding of slavery as it was in many places in the Caribbean is that as bad as it was, for instance, in the American South, it was more difficult in the Caribbean, and that sugarcane was a very difficult crop to, and basically had to be for years, that slavery was the only thing that kept that crop alive, is the only thing that made it profitable. And so I can imagine it makes a lot of sense then the biggest celebrations would be around the emancipation.
I think those two things are kind of a coincidence that the Emancipation Day and harvest appeared kind of at the same time.
Interesting.
I think someone from Barbados may know more than me, but I don't think the two are linked. I think it's just sort of a coincidence.
Okay. And you also mentioned that Bridgetown itself, that the central historic center of that is a cultural UNESCO World Heritage Site.
Yes, it is the most recent one in the Lesser Antilles, and it was declared, I think, just a few years ago. And it has a lot of the architectural stylings you'll see in older British colonial towns.
Hmm.
And if you look at all of the UNESCO sites, you'll see that there are a lot more Spanish colonial cities that are listed than there are British colonial cities. And even if you think about North America, there aren't a lot in the United States still, places that you can find original colonial things.
Right.
Boston might be the best example. Not a lot in Canada, per se. Your best example is actually French, probably in Quebec City. So you have to really go down to the Caribbean to see some of this, some of the older British colonial buildings.
Well, and it makes sense because usually the places that we visit that have this old architecture had a booming time and then had some time where they couldn't afford to tear down the old houses before they thought they were charming and historic. And so quite often the historic cities that we see had to have some sort of downtime. And I suspect that a lot of the American cities didn't have that in quite the same way. And so you didn't preserve some of the things that now we would look back and say, well, why didn't you save that? That was valuable.
The sugarcane production eventually sort of ended.
Right.
And I think that the ending of slavery both was a cause and an effect of that. That you saw the industry dying, which helped bring about emancipation, and then emancipation also probably weakened the sugarcane industry. And I think that the importance also, as steam-powered ships developed, a lot of these ports weren't as important for sure. Naval purposes anymore. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, you see some older buildings.
Okay. Should we go on to St. Vincent and the Grenadines then?
Yes. So I should only add, I was only on St. Vincent. I didn't actually get out to the Grenadines. But most of the people that visit St. Vincent and the Grenadines visit the Grenadines, because the Grenadines are some of the highest end, most expensive places to visit in all the Caribbean, even more expensive than St. Bart's.
Mm-hmm.
Because what you have on those islands isn't necessarily high-end hotels. It's villas that celebrities may rent for weeks or months at a time. So we're looking at $10,000 a week type villas that are available, or very high-end housing developments. So I think Mick Jagger has a home somewhere in the Grenadines, things like that. And so most people don't visit the island of St. Vincent. And in fact, it's had a rather bad reputation in some respects. But I had an enjoyable time. The place I stayed, and again, this was during the low season, was rather affordable. It was slightly under $100 a night. Fine location, right on the beach. I certainly didn't have any problems, and whatever crime may exist was primarily in the capital.
And you did not stay in the capital?
You were just outside of it.
Okay.
Yeah, in Kingstown, which is the capital. So I was maybe 10 or 15 minutes away. When you're on an island, it can actually be quite a bit.
And how many Grenadines are there, do you know?
120,000, I think.
Oh, my God. Okay. I knew they were small, and I knew there were lots, but I was not in the right order of magnitude.
Yeah, it's not a very big country. Things in terms of tourism, I believe, may change soon, primarily because they're building a brand new airport. And I actually got to see it, and it's well underway. I think the runway may be already done by the time we're recording this. But what it means is that 747-type planes are going to be able to land in St. Vincent, which should really open up tourism. They've made a very large investment in this. The airport I flew into was quite small. And for the most part, it is like what you see in Dominica right now, in that you can't fly there direct from most major destinations because of the size of the airport. So they're making a very big investment into their infrastructure, which I think should really expand tourism over the next decade.
And when we talk about these different island groups, and you're kind of lumping them by country, really, for instance, when you lump Martinique and Guadeloupe, those are not right next to each other. But all of these, except for those two, are independent?
In the Windward Islands that we're talking about in this episode, yeah. All independent except for Martinique and Guadeloupe.
Okay.
In the Leeward Islands, most of those, or I should say at least a large number of those, are still territories because they're smaller islands.
Got it. Okay.
St. Vincent and the Grenadines, seat in the UN, ambassadorships, whole ball of wax, their own passports. I actually took a tour of the island with an American couple that had moved there. They drove me around for the day. Some very beautiful spots in the island. Interesting thing to note is that the show, the movie Pirates of the Caribbean with Johnny Depp was shot there. And there are still some places where you can go and see what remains of the movie set. So they'll have pictures set up of what the set was like. They have some of the props that are still there. I think there was one scene where there was a skeleton hanging in this stone arch, a natural stone arch. And I think that's still there. And they kept the skeleton hanging there just so it's kind of a tourist attraction. So if you want an idea of what it looks like, just go watch the movie.
And that is a regular tour that other people could go on as well?
No, this was just some independent people that took me in their car and drove me around.
Just some friends. Okay.
I have no idea if there's day trips that are offered, but I'm quite sure there are. The beach that was near the Capitol, near the hotel I was staying, was a nice beach. And because it was a holiday, it was during that emancipation time again, there was a lot of people there that were locals, all just sort of spending the day on the beach.
Excellent. Anything else on St. Vincent?
I think that St. Vincent would be an interesting place to return to in, say, 2 or 3 years once the airport is open. Uh-huh. Because I think you're going to see a big change on the island. They're making a big investment in tourism. They've kind of been left by the wayside because of other islands that get more tourism. Barbados gets an awful lot of tourism. It's one of the larger islands in the chain that we've been talking about. Barbados's population is well over 250,000 people. St. Lucia, again, has 200,000 people. St. Vincent, Dominica, and Grenada are all kind of the smaller islands, and they don't get nearly as much tourism, and they're also harder to get to. And I think those two things may be linked.
And is your impression, I mean, you traveled connected to a number of the different tourism boards here. Is it your impression that the overall tourism to the Caribbean is growing, and so there's room for St. Vincent to grow, for instance, or does Barbados have to lose tourists for St. Vincent to grow?
Well, that's the weird thing. Most of the Barbados tourism, or I should say a very large number of it at least, comes from the UK, not from the United States. Whereas most of the other islands, it comes from the United States or maybe from Canada. And the reason for Barbados, I'm not really sure. I think it's a cultural thing or a historical thing. Traditionally, that was the destination that the Brits go to in the Caribbean. Barbados is also, if you look at a map, it's a little bit out of the sequence of the rest of the islands. So it's like 100 miles to the east, whereas everything else kind of tends to be, you can see the next island from the one over. Barbados is the exception to that. So maybe it's a little easier to fly to. And it's also much flatter, which means it's easier to land a really large jet in Barbados. So, yeah, these things will definitely change. And I think that as people look for, let's say you go to St. Lucia or St. Martin every year on vacation, you may be looking for kind of the next thing. And St. Vincent could probably become the next thing once it becomes easier to travel to.
Got it. And then Grenada.
So Grenada, if you look at a map, the country to the north is St. Vincent and the Grenadines. And Grenada actually is the island of Grenada. And then there's some smaller islands north of that, which are kind of part of the Grenadines. So it's all sort of one thing. And when most people think of Grenada, they obviously all kind of think of the same thing. That was the U.S. military invasion in the early 80s because not much else has really happened in Grenada.
Well, and they had a medical school there. Those are the two things I know about Grenada.
I think they still have the medical school. The funny thing is most of these islands I've been to have medical schools. They either have a medical school or a veterinary school. But that was the case in almost every place I visited. The tiny island of Saba had a medical school. So that's kind of one of the things they specialize in. I was there in Grenada during their carnival celebration. So there was a lot that was closed. And the carnival celebrations, at least I got the impression that they were a bigger deal for locals and for people from nearby islands than it was for people from, say, the United States or Europe or even South America. Meaning there aren't a lot of people who are in the middle of August who are going to travel to the Caribbean for a vacation to see Carnival. Mm-hmm. So it was mainly for the people on the island and for people from nearby islands that wanted to go on their vacation. And so they would go visit Carnival on a nearby island.
Well, I'll have to say that in this region, going back up to the Leeward Islands, the Windward Islands and such, the only island that I really know of for Carnival would be Trinidad.
And we'll definitely get to that. But Antigua has a very big Carnival celebration. And again, that's a summer one as well. And they all basically, from what I understand, got their start based on the Carnival in Trinidad, which I believe was the first Carnival in the Western Hemisphere. And that even what you see in Brazil got its rough basis on what happened in Trinidad.
Interesting.
Or at least that's what they like to say.
I'm sure of that.
But Grenada is another place I'd like to go back to. I didn't really get to spend as much time there as I had liked because I was kind of on the clock at this point. I had to get to Trinidad at a set time, and I didn't get to explore as much of the island. Many of the people I met in the course of my travels through the Caribbean all said that Grenada is the Caribbean like it used to be several decades ago. It's not as developed. Once you get out of the capital, it's much more laid back, and you don't see quite as many resorts with the exception of like the southwest portion of the island, which is not far from the airport, which is where most of the resorts are.
Mm-hmm. In terms of the different cultures in between the islands, we haven't really, I think in the first one, when we talked about the Leeward Islands, you had more notion that this island is different from this one and it's different in this way. Are these more similar one to another?
I think there's a similarity between all of the former British island colonies, so much so that in the 1960s, when the decolonization movement was underway, they were all going to be one country, the country of the West Indies. And there was a problem because, so it was going to be the British islands we've talked about in Lesser Antilles, Trinidad, and Jamaica. Well, the problem is the balance between these countries is not the same. The largest by population is Jamaica. So Jamaica right. wanted to be have the capital. And eventually Jamaica decided, we're going to do this on our own. We're going to become our own country, which left the other islands. Well, then Trinidad would have been the logical place for it because that's the largest. And eventually Trinidad wanted to do its own thing. And then it went to Barbados, and then they wanted to do it. And so you wound up with, and that's the reason you have all of these little islands as their own country rather than one English-speaking Caribbean country that spans the whole region, is because things basically sort of fell apart because nobody could agree on anything. And that's a common theme I heard talking to locals. I complained about how difficult it was to get from island to island or things like that. And they said they agree, but when the islands come together, everyone wants to be in charge. And then the result is nothing gets done.
Now, you didn't run into problems, other than Barbados, which we talked about, you didn't run into problems getting from island to island as much here as you did in the Leeward Islands. I remember we talked about a particular issue you had there.
Guadeloupe to St. Lucia, again, was very easy. Mm-hmm. But then again, the flights I had to Barbados, to St. Vincent, to Grenada, and then to Trinidad, I think my flight leaving Barbados was late by 4 hours or something. You get these delays and they cascade through the system. And so, yeah, there's still a lot of delays and you're pretty much stuck on one airline, Liat. That's your only option in the right. region. And I was told, I do not know if this is true, it might be a conspiracy theory. There is a ferry boat in the dock in Barbados ready to go. There's a company that wants to start ferry service to and from Barbados to, I think, St. Vincent or St. Lucia or both of them. But the government is preventing them from doing it because they're part owner of Liat and they make money off the airline and they don't want any competition. It would save people a ton of money, but the government won't let it happen.
Now, the other thing you made reference to that we haven't talked about in this time is you were there in the off season.
Correct. And I should add, I would do it again in a heartbeat because mm-hmm. while I was there, temperatures were cooler than they were in most of the United States. People think the further south you go, the hotter it gets. But you have to remember when you're surrounded by ocean water, it really regulates the climate. So yeah, it was warm, but you'll almost never see 100 degree temperatures Fahrenheit or temperatures, say, into the 40 Celsius in the Caribbean. It's always going to be more mild than that.
We should point out that the very fact that we call them the Leeward and the Windward Islands talks about the fact that there is wind. There are trade winds that go through here
yes.
that also affect the temperature. But we are talking about tropical areas. So when you say cooler, you don't mean cool.
No, I mean relatively
yeah.
compared to a hot summer in the Midwest or the Southwest or someplace like that.
Okay, excellent. I think we've got one or two left, depending on how you count.
One more. We're going to talk about Trinidad. And Trinidad, of all the islands in the Lesser Antilles I got to visit, was by far the most unique of all of them. Mm-hmm. And that primarily has to do with the fact that the culture in Trinidad is so different. For starters, it's a much bigger island. Area-wise, I think it's by far the largest in the group. It's very close to Venezuela, very, very close. And about half the population, roughly, is of Indian origin. And so you have a lot of Hindus on the island. And this manifests itself not only in Trinidad, but in many of the other islands as well, where one of the most common foods is roti. So you'll have an Indian bread with some sort of stuffing in it, and you kind of eat it like a burrito or something.
Back up a second here, because I'm thinking other people just did what I did, which you said Indian origin, and we went to Columbus's mistake. But you are talking about India as in India.
Yeah.
Why are there so many Indians on Trinidad?
The same reason that there are so many Indians in Fiji, and the reason there are so many in Guyana, because the British brought them in to work. Okay. They felt, based on their views in the 19th century, that they could handle the hot sun better. And so they were usually brought in on contracts where you would get a set amount of money or something and work for 3 to 5 years. And as a result, there's a very large Indian population on Trinidad. And you will see Hindu temples. You will see people's front yards. They will have a flag, some sort of colorful flag in the front. That usually means that they're Hindu. There were two very large Hindu temples that I visited. One was a place called the Temple on the Sea, which was actually built by a single man about 100 years ago, who simply felt that there should be a pilgrimage destination on Trinidad for the Hindus who live there. And so he built it by himself, by hand. He was not a rich man. He was a poor man. But just by himself, by hand, he built this temple. And it has become a pilgrimage site, just as he had hoped it would be.
Now, of the two islands in Trinidad and Tobago, did you get to Tobago?
I did not.
Okay.
But I should note, when I arrived, even from the very first person, the immigration officer, they asked me if I was going to Tobago, because Tobago gets most of the tourism of the two islands.
Hmm.
And it's also by far the smaller of the islands, mm-hmm. but it has the beaches and things like that. Trinidad is much more industrial. You'll see more manufacturing. There's oil there. And so that alone also means that the economy in Trinidad and Tobago is very different than the rest of the Caribbean.
Right.
It seemed much more developed. The urban area and the downtown area seemed as high-rise buildings, things like that. And the oil money really sort of changes it, and the high population as well. One of the most interesting things in Trinidad, I took a day tour, and I went to a place called the Pitch Lake. And as the name would suggest, it is a lake filled with pitch.
With crude oil?
No, not oil, pitch. Crude oil would be an actual liquid. Pitch, well, I guess it technically is a liquid, but it is one of the highest viscosity liquids in the world. It is so viscous that there's a place, I think it's in Australia, that has been conducting an experiment over the last 100 years. They filled up a glass jar with pitch, cut the bottom off, and it has been dripping. It drips about once a decade. That's how slow it is. So you can walk out onto this lake made of pitch, and you, on a hot day, you will feel yourself start to sink very, very slowly. You'll only go so far. There's no danger. But there are some soft spots on the lake, which is why you need to go out with a guide, where people have been stuck, and it's like quicksand. And they show you a photo of a guy who got stuck, and he got pulled out. Someone put a branch, and they pulled him out. But he was basically covered in tar. It was quite a thing to see. And as strange as this sounds, so the area around the pitch lake, it's like natural blacktop.
Right, sure.
But it's natural.
But deeper.
Yeah, but the areas around it, you're like walking on blacktop, but it's not. It's just this pitch from the lake. The blackness of the lake, and so there are kind of crevices, and it's not perfectly flat.
Mm-hmm.
Water collects in there, and the blackness of it with this water made for some of the most surreal images that I've ever taken. Because you have this natural kind of rainbow effect that happens, and you get these almost perfect reflections of the sky. Very, very interesting place to visit.
Huh. Just trying to picture this. I don't think this isn't one of those things that I say, oh, just like, because I can't think of anything that's like that.
I don't know if there's another pitch lake in the world, but this is by far the biggest, which is not to say it's a big lake, but
right.
Do a Google search on the Pitch Lake in Trinidad, and you'll see some photos of it or maybe some videos. It's a very interesting place, and no place really like it in the world. As far as you talked about foods and mm-hmm. roti, the big food on the island of Trinidad is bacon shark. That is three words, not two. It's bake and shark.
Okay.
It's basically a fish sandwich. And I wish I could say there's something special about it, but really it's a shark sandwich. And up on the north coast of Trinidad, they have these tents set up near the beach, and they sell bacon shark.
I was actually more interested when I thought it was two words, but...
I think someone should add bacon to it to make bacon shark. But believe it or not, I had a... So I took a tour one day, and we kind of did the northern part of the island. But one of the other people on the tour with me was a man from Aruba. And he had come all the way to Trinidad just to try bacon shark because Andrew Zimmern said it was one of the 10 best things he has ever put in his mouth.
Huh. Okay.
So that's pretty high praise.
And did you enjoy it?
Yeah. I mean, as a fish sandwich goes, it was probably one of the better ones I've had. But at the end of the day, it's a fish sandwich.
So looking at the whole region right now, just at the Windward Islands, where did you like the food best?
I'll probably say Trinidad. I don't think there's a whole lot of regional variation. Okay. There's a lot of similarity in the food. And I'm sure you could probably find people listening to the show that can say, on this island they do this dish or something. And that may be true. But for the most part, it's highly similar. And if you think of Caribbean food, other than jerk seasoning, mm-hmm. There aren't a lot of unique dishes, I don't think.
Okay.
Bacon shark definitely was very unique. And I should also add, on the day tour I went on, we went up into the mountains, saw some fantastic waterfalls, and we also visited a place that had one of the highest concentrations of hummingbird species in the world.
Oh, interesting.
And there were, in fact, a lot of hummingbirds. And I tried to photograph them, and that is very hard to do.
Well, do I know.
You need a very high shutter speed.
Best beaches in the area.
The islands are very mountainous, and mm-hmm. So I think Barbados probably has the best beaches, and St. Lucia. A good rule of thumb is the flatter the island, the better the beach.
Right.
The more mountainous it is, you're going to have less beach development. So Dominica did not have very good beaches, but they had better forests and better hiking and better adventure right. things to do. The flatter islands that could take the big planes, the ones that could support a big runway, tend to have the better beaches. St. Lucia had very nice beaches. Barbados had very nice beaches. Trinidad, not known for very good beaches. Tobago has that. But the place that served the bacon sharks, or that's famous for it, is Maracas Beach on the north shore of the island. That's a very beautiful place, and there are several very nice beaches that we saw there.
So I'm hearing that after having been in the Leeward Islands, you found better beaches there than in the Windward Islands.
I found better beaches on Anguilla mm-hmm. and Antigua. Montserrat, for example, mountainous right, volcano, right. no beaches. Nevis had some nice beaches. St. Kitts had a nice beach kind of in the bottleneck. If you look at a map, it's like a guitar, kind of in the neck of the guitar. St. Bart's had scattered beaches that are very exclusive and kind of high-end. The coolest beach was in St. Martin, where right at the edge of the runway. So right. you can get blown over by a jet engine, which we talked about last time. I think that's one of the things people, when they go to the Caribbean, it's like, I'm going to go and I'm going to sit on the beach. And yeah, there are beaches you can sit at, but I think that you should definitely, depending on the island you go to, take the time and go rent a car or take a day trip and basically explore the island. Mm-hmm. Because there are some interesting things in the interior of these islands, and it's not all just beaches.
And you mentioned the Pitch Lake. Other surprises?
Nothing quite like the Pitch Lake. I'd say maybe the...
I think that may have been the answer to my question.
The hot springs in Dominica was really interesting. The turtle release I got to see near the Rosalie Bay Resort, they have a turtle program where when turtles come in and breed, they will protect the eggs and then dig them up when they're ready to hatch to make it easy. Basically do stuff to ensure a higher birth rate of sea turtles.
And what are the predators they're protecting them from?
Birds.
Okay.
As soon as they get onto the beach, they're open prey for pretty much any bird. As soon as they get into the water, they're open prey to fish, almost everything. Not to mention a lot of them, they may lay 100 eggs.
Right.
Of those, maybe 10 to 20 will crawl out of the sand and make it to the water. And of those, maybe one will survive. The rest will be eaten by something else or die. So anything you can do to increase that from 1 to 2, that's a doubling the population in the long run.
Right. Interesting. Best pictures, 3 best spots to take pictures in the Windward Islands.
The Trafalgar Falls right. on the island of Dominica. Really, that was one of my favorite. Pitch Lake, just because okay. it's so surreal and so different. And then I would say the Pitons in St. Lucia.
Okay.
Those two mountains are so iconic. I would go back to St. Lucia just to reshoot that, because when I was there, it was in the late afternoon, and I'd like to go back in the morning when the sun would be a little bit better.
Now that you've had a chance to see so much of the Caribbean, more than most people get a chance to, what did you find that has changed your perception of the Caribbean, of the area, after having spent so much time there?
I think most people, I've just gone through a list of islands that most people either they've never heard of, or they've heard of it, but they don't know anything about it. Mm-hmm. And I like to call them the places that people only hear in the opening ceremony of the Olympics. You're watching the opening ceremony, it's like, and here's the team from Nauru. It's like, where's that? And then they have to describe where it is, and then you never hear about them again for 4 years. And there are places like St. Vincent and the Grenadines, or Dominica, or St. Kitts and Nevis that people just, they've never heard of, or they don't know anything about it. And so they just sort of lump the whole region together as the Caribbean. And once you've been there, then even though there are cultural similarities, you understand what makes each island different, and what you're talking about when you're talking about one island versus another one. And so they have individual personalities to me. Kind of like the difference when you know a set of identical twins. You see identical twins walking down the mall, and you're just like, oh, there's a set of twins. But if you actually have twins as your friend, then you begin to know the differences in their personality.
And where do you get most of your tourist information? I mean, you were talking to the tourism boards for some of these, but where was your best source of information?
For this trip, I really didn't work with many tourism boards.
Oh, didn't you? Oh, okay.
No, in fact, for the Windward Islands, the only one I worked with was Trinidad.
Okay.
I just show up and ask people. That's really it. I wish I could say there was more to it. I have traveled enough that I think the more you travel, the more confident you get in your ability to just show up someplace and wing it. Mm-hmm. That the less you travel, you put more planning and thought into it, because you don't want to screw it up. You only have one chance.
Well, also those of us who only have 2 weeks of vacation a year not only have 50 weeks to do planning, but also are a little more concerned about how those 2 weeks go. So,
oh, absolutely. And yeah. I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I'm just saying.
No, yeah, it's just different.
Given how I travel, yeah, I tend to just show up. And I have been many, many. Just to give you an example, we're doing this interview. I'm in Las Vegas, Nevada.
Right.
I just flew in yesterday from Sydney, Australia. And yesterday morning, I had no place to stay. So while I was doing my layover in Vancouver, I got on my computer, found a room, and booked it.
And I'm sure that people will be curious, what do you use for that? Do you use Hotel Tonight, when you're trying to do a room?
I have used Hotel Tonight. Mm-hmm. It's not my favorite simply because it tends to offer discounts on very expensive hotel
places
rooms.
Places that you wouldn't stay. Yeah, okay.
Yes. So they're still rather expensive, yep, but not cheap. I usually want to spend less, $100 or less per night, because I'm very cheap and I travel so much. So I tend to use hotels.com simply because it gives me a wider selection, and every 10th night is free.
Right. I do as well, but I'm cheap, but I'm just cheap. I don't travel as much as you do. I'm just cheap. Most memorable local you met when you just showed up and started asking questions?
The guide I had that took me to the Pitch Lake in Trinidad. He spoke Trini, which is kind of the local dialect. And it was a weird mix of like a Caribbean dialect, but with a little bit of Spanish in there. And I had a hard time understanding him, but he'd just tell these stories about stuff and explaining local things. And as it is with a lot of places, your guide is going to probably be one of the more interesting people you meet, because they know so much about the region.
Right, sure. Before we get to our last questions, since you're just showing up, you get a chance, I think, sometimes to make mistakes that some of us try to avoid. What mistake did you make so we won't have to?
The mistake I made on this trip, I think, was trying to do all of the islands at once. It would have been far easier to do if I had done the islands in groups. And now I have a better idea of what those groups are, simply because of the ease of the plane flights. So, for example, like I said, Guadeloupe, Dominica, Martinique, and St. Lucia can all be kind of done in one group because of the ferry service. That makes it very easy. It's a reliable ferry, works very well, French owned and operated. It's great. Up in the Leeward Islands around St. Martin, if you use that as a hub, there are many small islands around there which can all be visited very easily. either by a water taxi service or a very short plane flight. So I just think you need to do that part of the Caribbean in chunks would probably make it a little easier.
Okay. What is the difference in price between a ferry service between the islands and the flight? Obviously, the ferry is going to take a little longer, although we're not talking about places that are that far apart.
One-way ticket on Liat was around, I want to say, $125.
Okay.
From island to island.
20-minute flight?
Well, if you're going to Barbados, it's a little bit longer.
Sure.
So as you get down into the windwards, the flights tend to be a little bit longer. And to Trinidad was a little longer, but you're still half hour to an hour max, depending on what sort of island jumping you're doing.
Mm-hmm. And the ferries?
The ferries, if I recall, it was less than $100, that was for sure. I want to say it was around 60.
Okay. Excellent.
But again, you're sort of paying European prices because it's a service out of the French islands,
mm-hmm.
but it's still cheaper than flying.
One thing that makes you laugh and say only in the Windward Islands.
The fact that every time you go between these islands, you're going to a brand new country. And it's not like the European Union where you can just go from one country to the next, although it should be like that. Because the historical path they took where they all end up different countries, you have to have your passport every time you go between countries. You have to fill out a customs form every time you go between countries. And you got to go through immigration every time you do that. And that is really a pain when you're going island hopping like that. And I would hope in the long run that there would develop some sort of – there's a thing called the Caribbean community, I think,
mm-hmm.
that's trying to be like a European community for the Caribbean. Mostly I think it's dealt with tariffs and whatnot. But, boy, if they had a Schengen zone for the Caribbean, I think that would help everyone in terms of not only for locals to be able to move from island to island and to help their economy that way, but also for people traveling who want to visit more than one island.
Excellent. Before we get to our last two questions, anything else that we should know before we go to the Windward Islands?
The form of currency on the non-French-speaking islands, except for Barbados and Trinidad that have their own currency, are all the East Caribbean dollar.
Hmm.
So St. Kitts, Dominica, St. Lucia, St. Vincent, Grenada, Antigua, Anguilla technically uses it. Montserrat use the Eastern Caribbean dollar, which is pegged to the U.S. dollar. And I forget, I want to say it's 2.7, but it's not a one-to-one. So you can use U.S. dollars freely in all those places. They're accepted. They just use it at that pegged exchange rate.
Interesting. Last two questions. I think you know what these are. You really know you're in the Windward Islands when what?
When you find yourself waiting several hours for a Liat flight to show up.
And if you had to summarize the Windward Islands in three words, what three words would you use?
Small, beautiful, tiny.
Well, and that seems only fair because Gary has been our reporter for the Amateur Traveler reporting on the small places, the in between the big countries. One of these days we'll have you come back and talk about a big country, Gary. But
I am the grout in the Amateur Traveler. All the other episodes are like bricks. I'm the mortar. I fill in the places that other people don't talk about.
Excellent. Wonderful having you back on the show, and I will see you tomorrow in Las Vegas.
Well, I'm looking forward to it. Thanks for having me.
Anybody who happens to be in Las Vegas and who listens to this show right when it comes out, the next day after this comes out, Gary and I and Jen Leo will be doing a live This Week in Travel show at the New Media Expo. So if you are attending that expo, feel free to come and see us. Thanks so much for coming back on the Amateur Traveler, Gary.
Thanks for having me.
And where can people read more about your travels, your award-winning travels, we have to say?
They can read more about it at everything-everywhere.com, and they can find me on the plethora of social media platforms where I'm hosted, including such things as Friendster, MySpace, and pretty much everything you can think of.
And I should congratulate you on this show. We have talked about it a lot on This Week in Travel, but since you have been on Amateur Traveler doing the other half of this show, you have won a Lowell Thomas Award for Journalism for your photography, so congratulations for that.
Thank you very much.
This show is already going to be one of our longer shows, so I'm going to skip community news right now, and we're going to end the show here. If you have any questions, feel free to send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com, or better yet, leave a comment on this episode at amateurtraveler.com. You can also follow me on Twitter at Chris2X. And as always, thanks so much for listening.
Cafe. I know that I should